To handle a disaster is easy for me. But to handle conflict at home is not easy. My son, I'm not asking you. I'm instructing you to form an organization. The name in Arabic will be Waqful Waqifin.
Welcome to Visionaries Lounge. It's a huge pleasure to have you with us. In fact, if you were sitting on this couch next to me, I'd offer you some tea or maybe some water just to show you some good old-fashioned hospitality. As you know, generosity is encouraged by every society. And when it comes to generosity, my next guest is someone who has gone over and above the call of duty. Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman, the founder and the chairperson of Gift of the Givers. It is Africa's largest disaster relief agency. Doc, a very good evening to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good evening. Thanks for having me on your show.
It's a huge pleasure. Let's talk about Imtiaz. Before he was the great doctor and humanitarian that we know today, where did you grow up?
In the Northwest, in a town called Potchefstroom. Very small place, but it was a wonderful place. It still is a wonderful place. And we grew up in an extended family. Grandfather, uncles, brothers, sisters, families all living together in one big yard. Chickens, fowls, everybody, you know, all in the same place. It was a lovely upbringing in a lovely place.
It sounds like you got up to a lot of mischief. Tell me a little bit about that.
More than mischief, I think we grew up with a lot of love between us. Cousins did everything together. Brothers did everything together. Even the elder ones, like my father and his brothers, my grandfather and his brothers, everybody did everything together. And it was not only a close-knit family, it was a close-knit community. Everybody was one family. If somebody was having a wedding, even if you were not invited, you came to help. So it was something that built spirit, it built unity, it built, you know, a sense of community. And that's what I love about Potchefstroom, even up till today.
I'm seeing a thread that's starting to form now in your life. Is that where you got the sense of giving and the sense of helping humankind?
Well, the giving came more from my father's shop and my grandfather. They are traders, and my grandfather's passed on now, and even his father has passed on. But they started off, and the customers were mostly black people and poor Africana people living in Potchefstroom. And you would find everybody used to buy an account. That was a tradition in those days. So that trend ran from the great-grandfather to the grandfather to the father, and even runs today. And the other way, my mother, she started an employment bureau. And she said it's important to help people help themselves. So she found that, you know, making people earn themselves, get dignity, progress in life. And she had some people who came from nowhere and they became top CEOs in companies, you know. And the other thing she used to say is the poor, the real ones who need help, don't ask. So you must go out in the area. And if you can afford only one food parcel, then do only one food parcel, but don't do anything.
Because I want to now focus on your tertiary education. So you're done with high school and the like, and you go to varsity, you study to become a doctor, and you think to yourself, oh, I'll be a GP, etc. What were you thinking at that time?
No, the idea to become a doctor started also in Potchefstroom, because there was a family doctor called Dr. Hafaji. And what I loved about this man is whenever they called him, whether it's Monday, after hours, weekend, he would come with a broad smile, no sulky face, and he would do what, besides coming with a happy smile, he also was a very good doctor. And so that idea came from that age, that I am going to be a doctor when I get big.
How long did you practice?
8.5 years. I started on the 1st of January 1986, and I closed my doors on the 30th of June 1994.
I want to talk about why you closed your doors. Let's go there.
Because something bigger came in my life, Gift of the Givers. And that had a fantastic beginning. It was in Turkey. I visited a spiritual teacher in 1992. My wife was with me. And we came to a Muslim holy place. What was very amazing, that in a Muslim holy place, people from all religions were there. Jews, Christians, Hindus, and even people said, we don't believe in any deity or any form of God, but we feel a vibe, and they were there. And they were from all different countries. And after the program, the preacher just looks at me. I can see his eyes are focused on me, but he's connecting somewhere else. He says in fluent Turkish, I don't speak a word of Turkish. in fluent Turkish. My son, I'm not asking you, I'm instructing you to form an organization. The name in Arabic will be Waqful Waqifin. Translated into English means gift of the givers. You will serve all people of all races, of all religions, of all classes, of all colors, of all cultures, of any geographical location, and of any political affiliation. But you will serve them unconditionally.
You hear this great revelation, the atmosphere is charged up. You hear this word, your wife is next to you, eventually you're on a plane, you're back to South Africa, and then what?
I didn't take it so serious. I thought that this old man is telling me something. Yes, the old man is telling me something. Yeah. I've got a private practice in South Africa when I'm going to be doing all these things.
Yeah.
Maybe one food parcel here, feeding scheme there. Yeah. Maybe he's talking of something
like small scale,
some small thing
here, there, you know, part time, in your extra time.
You have to respect the old man. You can't say much. I said, okay, let's show some dignity, some respect, and, you know, discipline. I said, fine.
Okay.
I had no idea what he was talking about. Mm. But every time I met him, subsequently, I've been to Turkey 21 times. Mm. He said, my son, this thing will get bigger. It will get bigger. It will get bigger.
Mm.
He's gone now. He passed on in 1999.
Sure.
But I know what he's talking about now. And immediately I came away from Turkey. What happened? The inspiration came. You need to respond to the war in Bosnia. Eastern Europe is tearing itself apart. I'm thinking to myself, person starts logically. He does something small in his own country.
Yeah.
From food parcels, blanket, something simple.
Of course.
Who goes to a war zone?
On your own, but you didn't have your team there.
No team that time.
One man.
One man. And I said, no, I have full faith in what this man has said. And that's how we responded to Bosnia. And that was the beginning of Gift of the Givers. 31 containers of aid we took in, food, blankets, and other kind of stuff. In November, that was August 92.
Doc, let's hold that thought for a little moment. And when we come back, we'll find out what Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman could possibly still want to do over and above the exceptional work that Gift of the Givers has already done. Stay with us. Welcome back, and thank you once again for joining us. We continue with our riveting discussion with Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman. He is the founder and the chairperson of Gift of the Givers. Just before the break, Doc, we were speaking about this great revelation that you had received, that you would start a Gift of the Givers. You thought it would be something that is small scale. It turned out to be much larger than you had anticipated. Your very first mission, your operation to Bosnia, what was that like?
Very challenging. Almost 90% of what I know today I learned in that first project.
Sure.
Crossing international boundaries, Reserve Bank rules, SARS rules, being in a war zone, encountering opposition, getting shot at, getting bombed, you know, trying to be effective for joint intervention. And the point we came to after the first two missions, we decided to build a hospital. Because for the first time ever, a containerized mobile hospital was built. A big international media company compared the South African hospital to any of the best hospitals in Europe. And it was a product of African technology, innovated by Africans and taken to Europe. So it makes me really proud to be South African. We started off as a disaster relief agency. Everybody knows us for that internationally. Mm-hmm. But we started adding on other projects, agriculture, boreholes, life skills, counseling services, wheelchair distribution, and 21 types of projects. But within the projects itself, we could still handle more than one disaster a year, and then several disasters at the same time. And as the capacity grew and we started bringing in management and new teams and people with heart, the most important thing is people with heart, with compassion, with an Ubuntu spirit. And South Africa is full of people like those. In a war in Gaza or Syria, within 3 minutes, we have 120 medical guys want to go into a war zone. There's dangers and they can see how people are dying in the war zone. That's the spirit that drives you.
Where do you get the money?
99.9% of the money comes from ordinary South Africans. And I'll give you another example about the Ubuntu spirit of this country. You know Orange Farm. People in Orange Farm or kids in Orange Farm don't even have shoes to go to school. Forget the lunch. They don't even have the lunch box. They don't have a bag for their school books. They have no jersey in winter. The kids in Orange Farm raised 40,000 rand for the people in Somalia.
Wow.
So how can you not be driven when you have this kind of support from what you do on the other side and those behind you and fate in the middle of all this.
It hasn't come without controversy, though, Doc. Some of your interventions, especially when it comes to hostage negotiations, some people have been saying you're stepping on the toes of government, that perhaps you do things unilaterally. Talk to us about some of those obstacles along the way.
I have one policy. Mm. The teaching of my teacher. Best among people are those who benefit mankind. I would do everything possible to benefit mankind or to help people. Controversy doesn't matter to me, as long as it's right. If I was in that situation, if my wife or my child was in that situation, what would I expect? I would expect somebody to come running to help me, take me out of a hostage situation, no matter who has to say what. I really don't care. That's the kind of person I am. If it's right, if something to do to help people, we go all out. And eventually, the same noises, people making the noises, come out and afterwards they say, thank you very much.
I'm glad you touched on if my wife or my daughter, my child were in this situation, because family is quite integral in the operations of Gift of the Givers, is it not?
Yes. First of all, if you don't have the family support, you can't do what I do. Mm. You know, sometimes my wife calls me the absentee father. You know, she's the married divorced lady kind of stuff. And, you know, my kids sometimes don't talk to me for 20 days or at a time. And I'm in the house.
Because you're a workaholic.
Yeah, I'm in the house, and they tell me, you are here, but you're not here.
Yes,
that kind of story. And if they didn't have the same spiritual inclination, the same kind of thought processes, or the same kind of support, this work would have been very difficult. Because, be honest, to handle a disaster is easy for me. But to handle conflict at home is not easy. Mm. So it's very important to have equilibrium, understanding, and the support of your family.
How do your family support you?
First of all, they allow me to go. I mean, I can just get on a plane within half an hour, I'm gone. I mean, one morning I phoned home, I said, I'm in Joburg. I just went to school, I jumped on the plane and I went to Joburg. I once left for Bosnia in 35 minutes. You know, things like that.
Yeah.
And they understand, because they understand what implications are and what spiritual teaching is all about, it makes life very easy. But besides that, they're involved with me in my work. My kids, my wife heads the counseling division of Gift of the Givers. My children said, we want to do what you do in our own time.
What are some of the highlights when you look back and you think to yourself, that was such a close call, I didn't think we'd get out of that situation, or that was such a huge achievement, I didn't think we'd get that far. What are the most memorable events in your journey with Gift of the Givers?
I think two really stand out. One in Haiti and one in Syria. We sent our first Gift of the Givers own search and rescue team to Haiti, and we made world history. Because first time in the history of the African continent, a search and rescue team from Africa pulled somebody out of the earthquake rubble alive from the earthquake. And this was 8 days later. It was a huge achievement to show to the world that Africa has its place, that Africa can do something, and we carried the message of Africa. The second big challenge was in Syria, when two opposing rebel groups ran into the hospital and started shooting in the hospital. And my guys were in theater. I went under the table and started stitching patients' clothes. It was the fastest close-up in history, I think, of a patient. And the test was after that. I said, does anybody want to go home? And they all looked at me, and they said, we know this is faith-driven. They said, whatever you do, we follow. I said, we stay. And everybody put their hand up and said, we stay.
Do you have any fear that there could be possible harm that comes to you or your team during one of these dangerous operations?
That is my biggest anxiety.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid to die for myself, but I'm afraid when I'm taking the trust of wives, mothers, sisters, children, when I'm carrying all these other members with me, and you know, I have to do everything possible to make sure that they stay alive. It's risky, but they come at their own risk. They tell me, we are adults, we are people of faith. We know why we're coming. We know we can die, but we still want to come. It's a conscious decision we ourselves make. But still, it's on your head eventually, because you take the team in. It's a big burden to carry, you know. And when those bombs fell in Syria, they were bloody dangerous, you know. And I thought, oops, we're going to lose somebody here today. And that's my only fear that I have going into a disaster zone. Mm.
You speak of faith quite a lot. It's another central theme here. How do you top it up? How do you refuel? Because you're always on the go, there are always things to do, but there comes a time when you have to come to that quiet place again where you refuel your own faith tank.
Fasting is one of it. Mm. You top up in a fasting month, you are super conscious. You're eating less, you know, in morning and in evening, and while eating less, you feel your soul gets nourished, you're not disturbed by a lot of food, your mind is clearer, you can reflect. At night, we have night prayers, which extends late into the night, which I spoke about the doctor who mentioned, you know, who was knew the Quran by heart, and those night prayers boost you. Then we have what is called big nights, special nights in the Islamic calendar, and you stand up praying for the whole night. And then you have your quiet moments. But you see, you can't live this in isolation. You're dealing with human life. And the more you serve human life, the more your faith grows. Because every time you serve somebody and you bring some relief to somebody else, your faith grows. You cannot live this in a vacuum. You can't say, okay, I'm praying now and I'm serving somebody else. It's two different things. It's not two different things. Faith actually grows through service. So the more you serve, the more you get refueled. And the more it drives you. You know what? I'm not on the other side. I'm helping somebody on the other side. And the more you make a difference to one person's life, the more it fuels you and you're driven. I have to have this.
Can you imagine a reality without Gift of the Givers?
I'd rather be dead, to be honest. There is no life without Gift of the Givers. When your soul is and your mind and your body and your spirit is in one, you take one of the elements away, you're dead, you're a dead person. Rather be, you know, a dead person than to be walking like a zombie in the world. You have no sense of purpose. Life is about purpose. It's not about money. It's about purpose. And I found my purpose in life.
Doc, I am very intrigued now. Let's hold that thought for just a little moment. And when we come back, we'll find out what Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman could possibly still want to do over and above the exceptional work that Gift of the Givers has already done. Stay with us. Good evening to you once again. And if you've just joined us, a warm welcome to Visionaries Lounge. We continue our discussion with Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman. And we highlighted all your great achievements through Gift of the Givers, Doc. But I do believe that there are two things that you have yet to do, that you've always wanted to. I have a sneaking suspicion that that garment next to you has something to do with it. Tell us about that.
Before I come to the garment, let me dispense with something else. Mm-hmm. All my life, I wanted to be a physician. I loved internal medicine, and I still have a passion for internal medicine. But effectively, when the teacher said, you know what, this is an instruction for you for the rest of your life, and I had to make a choice between medicine and relief work. Mm. I had to give up medicine. So effectively, my dream to become an internal medicine specialist or a physician was killed. Mm. But I accepted that. The second dream was not related to the spiritual teacher or to Gift of the Givers and to anything else. It was something personal. It was came born out of Bruce Lee movies. I loved watching Bruce Lee. Yeah. And I always said to myself, one day, I'll be a black belt in karate. Mm-hmm. The only black belt I have, the one that I'm wearing on my pants.
Around your waist now, yes.
No black belt. Yes. But something strange happened. I was invited to a karate function. Mm. And a karate master in South Africa, a guy called Solly Said, came to the podium, took out his belt. And he said, my friend, this belt is what I've worn for the last so many years. And he said, this is what my master gave me. It's a fifth dan black belt. And he said, what I hold dear in my heart, I'm giving to you because I hold dear the work of compassion that you do. But not only am I giving you this belt, there were two American guys with him. They said, we are now inducting you in the Hall of Fame in America for martial arts. It's not the real thing.
So you got an honorary black belt.
Fifth dan.
Okay, you know? Okay.
But I said, look, me, I like to earn what my stripes. And I said, what I would like to do is, when I come to Johannesburg, I'd like to come for an hour or two to your dojo and do whatever training I can.
But doctor, I have your book with me here today. And just going through it and seeing some of the pictures and reading one or two of the paragraphs there, I can't help but wonder what all of this has taught you about yourself.
Well, it's shown me that I have a lot of capacity. Yeah. I have capabilities. God has given me many gifts, and I think what stands out strongly, and that is the reality, He's made me compassionate. You know, that because you cannot do this without compassion. And if you cannot know that about yourself, then there's something wrong with you. Yes, He's given me great compassion, and He's given me many skills, and He's given me a warm heart towards people. And He's taught me to be selfless, and He's taught me that the ego has no place. In Kosovo, I had a man who was a multi-millionaire, and he came to me, he said, I'm now standing in the bread queue. So it could happen to the best of us. If you know how you want somebody to respond to you, then you'll do your best to respond to people in need. and always goes back to the teaching, respect the dignity of man. So when you do it, don't do it from an ego position, from I'm the boss, I got the strength, I'm in charge, you lower down, and I'm handing out to you, I'm in this great position, I'm doing things for people. No, It must be done with humility, respecting the dignity, in privacy if possible, maintaining the confidentiality of the people, and doing it with love and compassion. Mm. Again, ask yourself, how would you want somebody to respond to you in that situation?
What does the future have in store, say the next 5 to 10 years?
I don't know. I don't know. There is no plan. For 23 years, I've been working without any plan because it's driven by God Almighty. Yeah. And for 23 years, the plan hasn't failed. So I'm not going to ask for the next 23 years what's going to happen.
I look at you and I see passion. I see drive. I see love. And I see someone who is genuine. But I think to myself, if I were to dare to do what you have done, first things first, feelings of great inadequacy would overwhelm me. Why me? Why would God choose someone like me? Did you ever reach a point, you know, in your journey where you thought, I'm not worthy?
You do question yourself. You say, look, you are a human being. You have failings. Are you spiritually strong? Are you a righteous person? Are you like a priest or an imam? Are you a rabbi or somebody to that effect? How strong has God made you from a spiritual point of view? Are you flawless? And when you look at yourself, you realize every human being has failings. If all of us are going to think like that, nobody's going to do anything. So that's out. You're never going to be perfect. But your perfection or your attempt to reach perfection comes through service. You've got to be realistic. I can't help the whole world. When I go to a disaster zone, I can't help the whole country. I actually can't even help the whole city. I may be able to help one street in that whole city. So, okay, I'm focused. I will help one street in that city. We'll send search and rescue teams out. We'll do primary health care, and we'll do trauma medicine. We can do 50 patients a day with the teams that we have, but we may save 50 lives a day. So if you've made a difference to one person's life, imagine making a difference to 50 people's lives every day for the next 10 days. You've got to be realistic.
Doc, you have helped millions of people, and yet I know that even if your efforts were for but one person, it would have been more than enough. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. I trust you have too. I know that I'm inspired. I hope you are just as inspired. Let's do it all over again next week. Have yourself a fantastic evening.
To achieve something in life requires determination, commitment, and self-belief. God helps those who help themselves is a very common statement. But have you ever done introspection? I'll give you my own life story. I met a spiritual teacher by chance, a spiritual teacher who gave me an instruction to serve all of mankind. I followed that instruction with sincerity and faith, and that sincerity and faith made me help millions of people. Can you make a difference? Do you believe in yourself? Introspect and you'll find the power within yourself. Do that, reflect, and you'll achieve miracles and move mountains.